Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, friends. Have a reboot episode for you. This episode was originally released June of 2017, which you will notice from our opening banter, which is very 2017 energy. This episode is all about the life and work of Jean-Michel Basquiat, as well as some pretty solid discussion of the art market. If that is a topic you're interested, we have since done a YouTube video also about the art market, so be sure to check out our YouTube channel. We'll also have that linked in the show notes. Also, big news from us here at the Art History Babes. We wrote a book. You can buy it. It's kind of cool. Once again, linked in the show notes where you can go to pre-order the Honest Art Dictionary written by the four of us. It has been where most of our energy has gone this past year, and we're really excited about it. So we would love it if you would check it out. And yeah, hope you enjoy this classic grad school era Art History Babes episode. And hope y'all are doing well out there.
The Art History Babes.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Ginny. And we are the Art History Babes.
And we back, and we back,
and we
man.
Back,
and we back.
Wow.
It has been a minute. Also, the Dubs just won the NBA championship.
Yes.
So we're like right in cloud nine right now.
Plus we're done with fucking grad school.
Yeah. We submitted our theses. We're like sort of grading, but we really don't care anymore.
Everybody
A's
gets an
for
A.
Everyone.
A plus for A, you, A minus for you, young sir. I don't know what the difference is. I really don't care. I had a student come into my office hours today who was like, I think that I deserved a B plus. And I was like, can you tell me why you thought you deserved a B plus? And then she gave me just some reasons. And I was like, of course, you get a B plus. As a matter of fact, I'll make it an A minus. And she walked out of my office on cloud nine. And I was like, fuck it. I graduate in like 3 days. I can do whatever I want. I am literally God right now. And that's fine. Yeah. She was very happy.
Yeah.
You made your day.
We've all written our theses. We've submitted them, which you know if you follow us on social media, because it's all we've been talking about.
We've
for, like,
been
the past
suffering,
month.
Dude.
It was hard. It was hard times.
It was hard. It was rough.
I cried so much. I cried. I drank too much.
I ate a lot of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
I ordered a lot of Indian food.
Yeah.
The dudes at the local Indian place just would be excited to come drop off my food because we'd have, like, a funny story. You know, we would banter.
You're tight with the dudes at what restaurant's that?
Kathmandu.
Yeah, you're tight with those guys.
Man, they love me. I love them. It's just great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely a lot of takeout. A lot of just, like,
Binge everything in excess.
Yeah.
But not enough sleep. Everything in excess but sleep.
We didn't binge on sleep.
No.
But we did it and we presented on our research, which went well, I think, for all of us.
I think we were all really good. It was nerve-wracking.
It was. But we'll do I think we should still definitely do some episodes, at least based, like, tangentially?
I think that we will.
On our theses, yeah.
All of our theses, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but, like, toot. all of our theses are actually really fucking interesting.
They are. So we'll do...
It's true.
We're not going to, like, do episodes necessarily presenting on our theses, but we're going to do some episodes that are related to our research because it's fresh in our mind and we went pretty deep with it, obviously.
We're literally masters of the information.
We are.
So we might as well... Right?
That's true, but it's also like, wow...
Right?
I know. We need to change our tagline on the website. We are no longer four grad students who drink wine and discuss all things visual culture.
Now we're four just like experts. Four people.
Master! Master!
Just a few masters.
Just a few masters,
you know?
Drinking wine and discussing all things
visual culture. We have to find a way to say that that doesn't sound as like douchey.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I don't know. I feel like I
maybe
believe...
if we say like master sorceresses...
I mean, we could say, masters in art history.
Mistress masters.
I don't even know.
Mistress. No, here's why I don't like mistress.
I'm saying
mistress,
the word mattress.
Mistress genders our achievement in a way that is somehow secondary.
Right.
True.
You know, because calling yourself a mistress or a madam... doesn't give that same mental
No. That's why I would combine them. I would never just say I'm a mistress. Well, maybe if I would if I was doing, like, a costume, I was deep in character, which sometimes happens.
Sometimes Jenny gets really deep in character.
Sometimes I show up at her house and she's in a full period dress.
She's like, can I meet up with you guys in 45 minutes? We're usually like, yes, please. Take all the time.
All of this is a joke.
No, it's not.
But yeah, so I don't know. We'll work through it. We'll figure out what our new tagline's going to be. If you have any suggestions, email them to us.
Oh, yeah. I would love to hear suggestions.
I feel like all of my creative juices are just, like, gone.
Oh, yeah.
So
totally. My brain is like a puddle of mud.
Like,
yeah.
Like the band?
Yeah.
What was that fucking song?
Oh, God.
Mud.
I don't even want to remember.
I do want to remember,
though. It's stuck in my head forever.
What was that song? Blurry? Was that the name?
I don't know. I don't know.
Don't ask me.
Just forget I said anything.
I saw Puddle of Mud live when I was like 12.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
I like how Mud had two D's in it.
I know why.
You're right. It was blurry.
Oh, man.
I don't even know.
Those were the days.
My boyfriend, his dad is like
is
really
in Puddle of Mud.
And like stained.
Stained!
Yeah. He thinks he's hella cool, right? Because he listens to this music from, like, 2000.
Forgot about Stained.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They're still around, dude.
They are? That's crazy.
Oh.
Oh, those are the days back in middle school, just of very mediocre, like, alt rock. But, yeah, anyways, the Warriors just won the finals. We're pretty stoked on that. If you're into basketball... and you were watching KD and his mom was just like the cutest thing in the entire world. Like, holy shit.
I cried legit tears.
Yeah, we were like crying. It was a whole thing.
Well, they were just so cute.
Right?
Like, you know,
she was so proud
of her son. Like, her son just did an amazing job and, you know, helped win the NBA, like,
MVP, baby.
He's an MVP. Wow.
It was great. And, you know what?
She's
like,
MVP.
That was super cool. And now we're back. We're going to talk about some shit. We're going to talk Basquiat. Also, basically, this next week, we're going to just try and drop, like, multiple episodes before we run off to Europe on you guys.
Oh, shit. We're going to go to Europe, and we're going to flood the Instagram.
Yeah, you're going to get so many
Holy
pics.
Hell. The Instagram's going to be lit. Oh. I just found out I had unlimited data in Europe.
Hell yeah.
And I'm like, well, what do you know?
It's going to be
blowing up our social media.
You're going to get so many pics of us in front of, like, castles in Prague and shit.
We're going to be doing, like, borderline inappropriate shit in most of these pictures, and it's just going to be hilarious. I can't wait.
Be at clubs in Berlin, just like...
I think you can't take pictures in there. I think they'll kick you out.
That's
hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, because people do, like,
I like that even more.
Now you'll just have to imagine.
We'll see, but I know for sure that there are some places that are, like, no cell phones.
Damn!
They don't even let you bring in your phone?
They, like, will kick you out if they see you using it.
What?
I swear.
What if you get separated from your group?
Right?
You're just supposed to ride
Do they have a PSA system?
I don't know, dude.
Hello.
We should probably stay.
Un Fraulein Americana.
We should probably just, like, stick together to the clubs where we can use our cell phones. You probably don't want
I don't
want to
get
the
lost
club.
In some, like, Berlin dungeon club. Because it would happen. I'd just be like, oh, I'm going to go pee, guys. See you in a bit. Like, go down some, like, dark stone stairwell and just, like, emerge into some shit that I...
In, like, a vampire's den?
Yeah. And just be like, no, 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 no. 999.
It's like the Kaiser of the dungeon.
I'm sorry, Germany. I don't mean to stereotype you.
Yeah.
I love you.
We're just being ridiculous.
No,
right
I mean,
now.
We have here in California, like, a whole very thriving BDSM community.
Very true.
So,
very
you know, true. Germany. I
and
know
probably in... some vampires, too, maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know that
definitely.
Germany's into some freaky shit, and you know what? We are, too. So, I can't wait to compare notes.
Anyways, get on our social media, because
really
we're going to have...
Transition.
We're going to have... Lots of stories and pictures and all that good stuff while we're gone. But
you better believe it.
Yeah. And this episode is about Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Yeah, we just were thinking about him the other day.
He's been in the news.
He's been in the news. We've just been thinking about him. Just thinking. Just ruminating.
I was ruminating. And then I got very upset.
Do you got beef, Jen?
You know what, dude? I have beef.
Yeah.
You know why? Because CNNBC just thought that they were being so fucking clever.
Fucking CNBC.
Like, oh, a Basquiat's Untitled went for $110.5 million. And, you know, so they kind of spotlight this guy, Isaku Maezawa, 41-year-old e-commerce billionaire. He's worth more than $3 billion.
He's very youthful looking, too. He's 41, but he looks like 22.
He's actually very cute. Yeah, I was like, oh, hello. anyway, I guess he started as an indie rock star. Switch style.
Yeah, Switch style. He was a singer for an indie rock band.
Now he's a fashion entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur.
Wow, I'm sorry, I don't know French words.
A fur trapper.
A fur trapper. He founded a online shopping mall and just made
what?
Billions, basically.
That's fucking
cool.
Nuts,
yeah,
dude.
What's his online shopping mall called?
Zozo. Zozo Town.
Oh, I've heard of Zozo.
Zozo Town. And he's also pretty dopey.
Is it like Soto Sopa?
He imposes a 6-hour work day for his employees.
Great.
Because he wants them to spend more time
America,
with their families.
Take note, please.
Because that's what you do when you're a good dude and you're a billionaire and you're like, I want to take care of my employees. It seems like a really cool dude. Also, he's a Basquiat fan, so like...
And he just happens to be filthy rich.
Yeah,
so he
right?
He bought some paintings.
He seems hella chill. But anyways, back to your beef.
Yeah, it really sucks. You know, we're watching this shit on CNNBC, and they're going on about, like, oh, this very rich man from Japan bought this painting for blah, 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 $110.5 million. And then they just, like, devolve into
start talking
this,
shit.
They just devolve into this whole thing about, like, how... you know, well, I mean, if he likes it, then I guess more power to him or some kind
yeah,
of shit like that.
Some stupid, ignorant bullshit, basically, like, pulling out every cliched modern art joke you can possibly, like, think of. Like, they
yeah.
literally do the, like, my child could paint that thing. Like, they pull out
it was
a child's
upsetting.
Artwork.
They put up Emma, who, by the way, Emma... You know,
I thought her art was dope.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's
Emma,
cool.
I
they call
it
you.
Unicorn vomit.
Yeah, they call it unicorn vomit. I know for a fact that little Emma did not name her painting unicorn vomit. Have some fucking respect.
For real.
How dare you? Okay. literally, like, that is so disrespectful and weird and rude. And why would you compare a child's art to Basquiat? And also, the painting that they chose to make their comparison didn't look anything like a Basquiat ever. And anyway, it was just infuriating.
It was in poor form.
It was super ignorant. You know, like, they showed... I mean, the main dude seemed a little more like he knew what he was talking about, but was just trying to, like, you know, play cool.
Like, he's the new Andy Warhol. And it's like, oh, bitch.
No. Like, you obviously don't know what the fuck is going on. And also, I just want to know what their names are. So,
We're gonna write him a letter.
No, my beef is real, and I'm upset.
We're putting them on blast right now. We're gonna definitely have a link to that video. It's on YouTube. We're gonna have a link.
Tell us their names
on our page. Like, go on there. You know, get in the YouTube comments. Like, because it was just like, yeah, it was in totally poor taste, and it showed zero understanding of like what Basquiat is or has done. Like, it was just so ignorant, the entire thing.
It was very upsetting, and I think that I would like to have words with whoever they are. I mean, who knows?
Let's get them on the show.
Let's have a dialogue. Let's talk about how you're wrong and shitty for your shitty opinion, and we're gonna tell you why your opinion is bad, and you should feel bad.
But it was also the way they, like, handled it. It's like, you cannot like Basquiat's work. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it was handled in this very, like, stupid, ignorant way.
Yes.
They just, like, didn't understand what they were even talking about. And I was like, you are doing, all you're doing is...
We almost had a wine.
Almost lost some wine. But we're fine. But they basically were like, we're going to do this, like, 4-minute spotlight on this really rich dude who
and
bought
talk
a painting
shit about it.
And like not actually give any you know time or understanding to the work itself, which is like everything that's wrong with the art market. Like, it was just like, let's talk about this rich dude who bought a painting and not actually like understand the art at all. It was stupid.
Also, I think that I might delve deeper into this if I do get the opportunity to craft some sort of letter to these two particular people at CNNBC, comparing a black man's art to children's art is
gross.
Fucking gross,
yeah,
dude.
Like, seriously.
That is disgusting. That's the basis behind primitivism.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all of the gross-ass impressionists like Gauguin were out there doing.
Fuck you, Gauguin.
We hate Gauguin.
I want him to come back in spirit form so I can just be like, fuck you.
Infantilizing, like, people of color's artwork is disgusting, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
For real. And, yeah, and at the end of the day, it's not even, like, I know they thought they were, like, being clever and funny, but it's, like, not. Like, everyone has heard the my child could do that argument.
Or even I could paint that. I've heard people say that.
And it's like, no,
so
you fucking
times.
Couldn't. Like, if, like, Basquiat was a fucking genius. Like, his work was so cerebral and, like, so interesting. And it's like, for you to not even take a second to try and understand that is so offensive. Like, it's so fucking offensive.
And it just goes to show that they don't have, like, any even tiny little speck of creativity. And it's probably just jealous.
Yeah, right?
But it's ill-informed. And of course, we understand that, like, there are a lot of issues about the art market where you, like, hear about things that sell for these just insane prices. So it's not like there's some validity to that, but like
definitely.
The way that you choose to talk about the work itself, like, even if it's not to your taste, just because it's not to your taste doesn't mean like, oh, it's not art and it just happened to be that way. Like, no artist just happens to make it like that fucking far to where they're that successful and prolific. Like, that doesn't just happen without any, even, like, a little bit of skill. Like, it's
like, someone could just be living in this world where they're like, I don't know how I got this famous. It's like, that doesn't happen, actually.
No.
That really doesn't happen.
Well, it just showed, like, the whole thing showed zero understanding of, like, the fact that Basquiat was, super prolific and was a big deal in the artwork when he was,
when he was alive.
And he continues to be a super big deal. It's like, you just didn't even take the time to understand what you're talking about.
Say goodbye.
your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
But you bring up a really good point. I think before we kind of dive more into just Basquiat, you know, biographical information and like his work, we should talk a little bit about the art market and mm-hmm. how this work kind of is, I mean, it's a big deal. So he broke the record. This painting sold for $110.5 million. Which broke the previous record, which was held by an Andy Warhol work. I actually don't know what work it was.
I don't either.
But he broke Andy Warhol's record, which is dope because I think... I wish Jen was out here because she would talk mad shit about Andy Warhol. But,
she will shortly.
She'll come back and she'll do it. Like, super stoked he has the record now.
Yes.
I'd much rather Basquiat have the record 100%. Than Andy Warhol. Like, much rather. However... there are some things to be talked about in terms of the art market. Like, I know, like, Ginny, what do you think about a painting selling for $110.5 million?
I mean, for me, it is unsettling just because I can't even fathom that amount of money. And I look at it, like, akin to a lot of, like, the housing market, you know, where
yeah.
you hear about these places that sell for these incredible amounts of money. And you're like, is it really worth that, though? Like, and who is pushing the market value for that?
For
because
sure.
it's a very, very small percentage of people. So in that sense, it's problematic.
Problematic.
And it's not a world that I think I will ever get into. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
you guys will start donating to our Patreon like crazy, and we're going to be buying Basquiat soon.
Open a super cool gallery somewhere and be like, oh, our rich patrons have facilitated these purchases. I'm sorry, I'm about it.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm saying, if I had the money, I, of course, wouldn't be like, oh, for shame. Like, I, you know... But
here's the thing, though. We're never going to have the money.
Exactly.
Okay, see, like, I kind of come at it from a similar but different perspective. Like, okay, like I said, really glad Basquiat has the record. I want him to have it over Andy Warhol. I love his work. I think it's super interesting and super prolific. And obviously, I think art is of value and it's important.
Yeah.
I don't think anything is worth $110.5 million.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. Like, nothing at all is
it's
worth
not,
that much money.
Dude. And we put blood, sweat, and tears over... visual culture.
Exactly.
And
it's
really not worth that much.
Exactly. I just don't, and especially because he is long dead and he will not see any of that. That money's going
yeah.
to Sotheby's. That money is going to the people who sell it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the art market is like all of these huge purchases, all of these $1 million purchases of art, the money doesn't typically go to the artists because it's always dead artists
yep.
that sell at auction
yep.
and then the money goes to fucking Sotheby's and it's like
or
who,
Christie's
or Christie's
yeah.
yeah and it's like so I mean I'm all for like working artists getting paid for their work like 100% but at the same time putting this insane of a price on a work where the artist is never going to see it. It just becomes this investment and it becomes this power play of like,
yeah.
look at this important piece of artwork that I have. And at that point, it becomes problematic because I think, and this is going back to the ideology of Basquiat himself. Basquiat did not appreciate elitism and
no.
like at all, like at all. He was not a fan of it and he wanted art to be for the people. And if you have rich ass people buying his art for their own private collections, then the art's not for the people anymore,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's at least something to think about. Like, you can disagree with me, but it's at least something to
no,
think
about.
No,
that's very valid.
You know?
I agree. And I agree. Yeah, for sure. And that's... oh,
It's complicated.
Just, it is. And you can talk yourself in circles around so
that,
much of it.
That same week that that work was sold for the $110.5 million, 19 other Basquiat sold that week for a total of over $200 million for all of them. Right? And it's like, yeah, like
and
I
it's
said.
It's just so fucking wild because there's a documentary on Basquiat called, oh, fuck, what is it called?
Is it The Radiant Child?
Radiant Child, yes.
And it's super good. It's on YouTube.
It is. We'll link it. But they talk about how, you know, when he was first starting living in New York, how he had a crush on this woman who was later, like, a long-term girlfriend of his, and she worked in a bar, and he would just go into the bar and, like, stand there and, like, watch her because he was so fucking poor he couldn't even buy a drink.
Yeah.
And then when he finally made enough money to buy a drink, then he went in and bought a drink, and now it's like, holy shit, dude. That is just crazy.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, I'm, like, if he knew, like, it's... I don't feel like he would feel okay about that.
Yeah, okay, so the thing with Basquiat is he definitely wanted to be famous. And we'll continue to talk about this more. He definitely was, like, hella motivated, and he wanted to be famous. He wanted to be a big deal, and like I said, he was super cerebral, and he, like, wanted his work to get noticed. I think he definitely wanted to make money, obviously, but also, like, the beginnings of his work came from total just, like... Like, he was he was homeless.
Yeah.
He was panhandling.
Yeah.
Like, his work did not come from a concern with money. While he did want to make it, he was not, like, a financially minded person.
No.
In any way. And so, like, if he was around today, if you went up to Basquiat and were like, your painting is sold for $110.5 million, I feel like he wouldn't even be able to wrap his head around that.
You know what I mean? He also, I think, would have been stoked, though.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like, any artist would be stoked that, like, their painting is that, you know, well-received, I think.
Basquiat was a very, I think, practical artist, and he understood how the art market worked.
Yeah.
And a lot of his understanding of this came from his relationship with Andy Warhol, who also understood that art is commerce, essentially. Yes.
But also, I feel like we should go back and kind of talk about his rise to Andy Warhol, because I feel like there was a big shift in who he was when he met Andy Warhol. Okay, so, Jean-Michel Basquiat. He was born in, I have it written down, December 22nd, 1960. He left home at the age of 17. He ran away. So his mother was from Puerto Rico. His father was from Haiti. They were immigrants, and then he's first generation.
Mm-hmm. So he was a first generation immigrant?
Yes. Is that the right term?
I don't know. First generation American.
Yeah, first generation. There we go. And his mom was like, she was an artist. She was into art. She would take him to different art museums and stuff. He was a junior member of the Brooklyn Museum, at age 6, he was a junior member of the Brooklyn Museum, which is super cute.
Wow.
And Guernica was always one of his favorites, like, from a young age.
He was
really into Picasso's Guernica, which makes sense.
Did you watch that Basquiat movie with the actors? Like, it's a biography of the actors?
It was the last time I saw it was a long time ago, but I've seen it before.
The opening, like, scene is, like, him as a child with his mom, and they're watching, they're, like, looking at Guernica.
Oh, that's perfect.
And he's, like, he kind of, like, cries and is sort of like, what am I looking at? Like, but it's, like, his introduction to
Is that the movie
world.
Where David Bowie plays?
Yes.
Andy Warhol. Yes.
Yes.
So
that is the weirdest combination.
But it's very good.
Bowie playing world, like,
it's on another level, man.
I highly recommend the film. I really enjoyed it.
No, it's really good. It's called Basquiat. I think you can, like, buy it on YouTube. You can find it. But, yeah, it's a really good film. David Bowie plays Andy Warhol, like, if that's not enough to pull you in.
Yeah. It's great, right? Yeah.
No, it's a great film. You should definitely check it out. So his mom would take him to museums, and she was very artistic. She also, I think, had, like, some mental health issues. But then his dad was an accountant. So you had kind of this, like, he was very... I don't know, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Practical.
Yeah, practical. He was a very practical dude. So he had, like, kind of both sides. He had, like, the right brain, left brain, even though that's the right brain, left brain thing's bullshit, but still. And then at age of 17, he ran away from home to New York City and basically just dove into this world of, like, artists and shit that, like, in the 70s were just, like, they would make art, they would make music, they would write poetry, they were just, like, doing all the arts. And we're all poor. And there was, like, a group of, what was it? They were called the Downtown 500. So there was, like, a group of, like roughly 500 people in New York City that all, like, worked together and kind of hung out, and they were all, like, artists on all different levels.
Yeah.
Like, visual, dancers, musicians, all of this, and they'd party together. Sounds amazing.
That sounds so
dope. I know, yeah. Right?
Can we be there?
I know, right? God. It sounds so cool. But, yeah, so they were all, like, just, like, poor, starving artists, and, you know, he just kind of jumped right in there. He first got noticed doing tags, doing street art, by the name of Samo. And it was him and his friend Al Diaz. And they would do these tags. But the reason they got noticed, because this was a time when street art was first, like, coming up. You know, people would tag their names in very stylistic lettering all over the city, especially in New York City. That's where it got its start. But he came in, him and his buddy Al, they came in and they would do these tags that were, like, oddly poetic. They wouldn't do the stylistic lettering. They would... Their tag was Samo with, like, the copyright, like, so S-A-M-O, and then the copyright symbol. They'd have all these poetic phrases. Samo does not cause cancer in laboratory animals. A pin drops like a pungent odor. Samo for the so-called avant-garde. It got noticed really fast because it was different from the typical street art that people were seeing. It's like these were, like, poetic statements. He was also in this band called Gray, which he didn't play any instruments at all. Him and there's one other dude who didn't know how to play an instrument that were in the band. And then, like, a few other people that didn't know how to play instruments. So it was very, once again, it was very avant-garde, like, kind of out there music. But, like, people were about it because that was kind of the vibe of this
I'd
circle.
I'd be in a band. I don't play instruments.
Exactly. Me too. Like, I just... hammer on some drums, whatever.
I mean, tambourine.
Yeah. And that was kind of what it was. It was very artistic, and it was very just, like, it was all about expression, I feel like. From what I understand from this circle, it was just, like, a bunch of people expressing themselves in literally any way they could get their hands on, which is hella cool. So, yeah, so he was kind of getting recognized in underground circles for this, but he wasn't making any money off of any of it. He was literally... a starving artist, was, like, living with girlfriends, was couch surfing, was panhandling. I was watching this documentary, The Radiant Child, which you should all watch. There's interviews with him where he's just, like, he literally doesn't know how he survived for, like, multiple years.
He lived in, like, a box.
Yeah, he was just getting by, making his art somehow. He didn't have... part-time jobs. He didn't, like, do anything like that, but he did start making money by doing t-shirts and postcards and collages, and then he would try to sell them. And this is where Andy Warhol comes in. So he, at one point, he saw Andy Warhol in a restaurant, just, like, randomly. And this was before he was, like, making a name for himself, and he just, like, walks up in there and sells him some of his postcards. And, like, Andy Warhol bought them. I don't think he was, like, particularly impressed, but he bought a couple of them. That was where the connection first started. Interestingly, Debbie Harry of Blondie bought his first painting for $200.
That's
my babe.
Yeah, so Debbie Harry and her boyfriend at the time bought his first painting for $200, his first, like, full-scale painting. Interestingly, Basquiat was later in the video for Rapture, Blondie's video for Rapture. Sure. So he's kind of starting to make some chump change off of his art. And then people start to take notice. This guy's doing something really interesting. I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Anina Nose. Actually, I think that's right. Anina Nose. She was an important, like, gallery owner at the time. And she came across his work and really liked it and thought it was really interesting. She had seen his work in some kind of show. She went to his apartment. And he didn't have any finished work. And he's like, I want to be in your gallery. But he didn't have any finished work. And he was straight up, he was like, well, give me some money to go buy canvas.
Yeah.
So she gave him money. And then she was like, okay, you can, like, live in the basement of my studio and, like, make work. And that's kind of where shit really, like, started to take off.
Yeah.
Because he was like, he had the space. He was able to make these, like, large-scale paintings and stuff. His first full show at her gallery, all of his work sold.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. Nice. Yeah.
When Andy Warhol comes in, it's really 1982. So his Zurich dealer actually brought Basquiat to the factory. This guy, Bruno Bischofberger.
Yeah, I think he's in the documentary, I'm pretty sure.
So he introduces them, and they immediately begin this dynamic friendship where they, like, sort of feed off of each other. Mm-hmm. So it's been described in a lot of these different sources as, like, a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Because,
you know, Andy Warhol, I think, recognized that he was on his way out. Like,
oh,
was,
definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, he totally recognized that he's like, I'm on my way out. Like, I'm kind of, I'm reaching that point of, like, a has-been.
And I don't think he was handling it well.
No, no. I think he was handling it really poorly. I think that Andy Warhol had been through a lot of accusations thus far of having been this person who kind of just, like, leached off of other people. And I feel like that's what he did to Basquiat. But Basquiat also benefited from that relationship.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, definitely.
Like, really much. So Basquiat, as mentioned previously, he was really overwhelmed by the fact that he was even a celebrity. He was just like, what the fuck? Like, what? I was living in a box. Like, now I'm, like, famous. And he really gravitated towards Warhol as this, like, protective alter ego.
Definitely.
So between 1983 and 1985, they made, like, a ton of collaborative works. One of their finest examples was just called Untitled from 1984. I'm not sure if that's the one that sold. Is that the same Untitled that
probably
sold?
Probably not.
For $110 million?
No, because it wasn't a collaborative work that sold. I think it was just Basquiat.
Yeah. They just started to feed off each other, and they formed this relationship that was somewhat of a father figure role relationship. Like, Basquiat actually formed a really intense relationship with Andy Warhol. Some people have, like, theorized that they had some kind of homosexual relationship. I don't care about that.
I know a lot of people said straight up that Andy Warhol was in love with Basquiat. Yeah. But, like, multiple people who were involved with Basquiat said that he was, like, strictly hetero, but at the same time,
also multiple people were involved with Basquiat.
Yeah, a lot of people were involved with Basquiat.
He was a heartbreaker.
Oh, for real. Yeah. Like, okay, so the thing about Basquiat is he's got that, like, enigmatic, mysterious, like, almost like prince-like quality. He's just like, you're just like, yeah, like, he's just, like, sexy in a way you don't quite understand, you know?
Which is,
like,
the sexiest.
I know, yes, right?
True.
He just, like, he's so enigmatic and kind of doesn't give a shit and is just, like, in his own world. Yeah, so many women and broke so many hearts and had so many long-term girlfriends, some, like, at the same time.
Yeah, they were all kind of, like, equally financing him.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it.
But speaking of his girlfriends, one of the main girlfriends, who Jenny was talking about earlier, that was the bartender.
Yeah.
Her name was Suzanne Maluk. And she was, like, around for a long time. Like, he lived with her a lot and stuff like that. They were, like, a pretty long-term thing. And he would do a lot of paintings with her, like, or he would do a lot of paintings with a Venus figure. And, like, she was always the Venus figure. Like, anything with Venus in it was supposed to represent her, basically. But where shit gets kind of interesting is, if you didn't know, Basquiat had an affair with Madonna.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's real. That's the thing that happened. And there's a painting called A Panel of Experts, made in 1987. And it was painted while he was having this affair with Madonna, but, like, Suzanne was still in his life. And in the painting, it's got Venus punching Madonna, like, in the painting.
What a fucking asshole, dude.
But, like, does that show who his favorite was? Like,
yeah, right?
Shows,
I don't know.
Like, how much of a hotshot he thinks he is.
I know, but at the same time, if I was in that situation, like,
I'd rather be punching
Madonna than, like, Madonna, you know, winning out. Like,
right.
At least I'm fighting Madonna.
I don't know that, but also, it's like, ow, dude.
No, it's still fucked up, of course.
Why you gotta do that?
But it's a really interesting painting. It'll obviously be on our images. And there's other things going on because all of his stuff was, you know, very, like, there was so much. What was the, there's a phrase. Okay, so he used this phrase in talking about his work multiple times. He would say is a boom for real.
Boom for real.
Exactly. And it was because, sick. I think it's so, like, perfect because he thought of his work as almost like an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. It's so much of his work is this explosion of different images and ideas, and it's just the remnants of
yes.
this, the remnants of this, like, beautiful Big Bang,
that's
you know?
That's true. That's true. And you want to sort of make fun of it, like, oh, really? It's a boom for real? But also, like,
it is,
I can't think of a better way to describe it. It's like, all right, shit. Like, I guess you get to describe your work that way.
And that's part of what makes it so intriguing and so important is because he was coming at a time where minimalism was so huge.
Yeah.
And his work is so undeniably expressive. It's just, like, expression. It's, yes. like, everything that's going on in his head.
It's got just a lot of emotion.
On a canvas. Yeah. And it's, like, beautiful and interesting. And it's kind of the anti-minimalism. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. Like, it's really cool. I think it's, I mean, I don't hate on minimalism. Like, I like minimalism. But I think it's way more interesting.
Yeah, especially when a lot of his contemporaries were dudes like Rothko.
Exactly. Like, there's something very stream of consciousness about his work. There's something very real about an explosion of his thoughts and what's happening to him. So the fact that he would include, like, in this painting, a panel of experts, like, it's not just about his girlfriend and Madonna having it out. Like, there's a lot of other things going on in this painting, and it's just him, like, expressing what's going on in his life, which I think is, like, super fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Madonna.
So that, I guess, kind of brings us to the point of where he, like, started getting pretty famous. Obviously, he was, like, hooking up
right.
with Madonna.
I mean, especially in the 80s, like, shit.
Yeah, right?
Now it would be like, oh. Sorry.
Aw, Madonna. But, yeah, so he was, like, you know, getting pretty famous. And this, you know, is also, yeah, where, like, he got real tight with Andy Warhol. And a lot of his close friends recognized a shift in him yeah. at this point, where, like,
yeah.
he was, like, you know, on
being
the verge.
Recluse.
Yeah, he was on the verge of being, like, a millionaire, right? He didn't have a bank account. Like, he wanted to be famous, but he wasn't great with money, basically.
Right.
And so he just, like, would hide his money, like, all over his apartment, like, under, like, cushions and shit. And he was having parties, like, every night.
That is
and
insane.
I cannot imagine. I'm like, stay out of my house.
Yeah,
like,
he was having parties.
To be near.
He was having parties constantly, and he just had stacks of cash hidden, like, all over his
It's apartment. Like Chris Brown.
Yeah. Fuck Chris Brown.
For real.
I only meant that comparison in that Chris Brown invites random people to his house for parties, and they steal shit from him, and he probably should stop.
I'll fight him right now. Well, I'll fight Chris Brown.
Chris Brown, you need help.
But yeah, so he got to this point where he's fairly famous, and I mean, at least from what people close to him recall, is it's weird because he wanted that. He wanted to be a big deal, and he had the right to want that because he was,
yeah.
like, he was pretty genius. Like, he was doing amazing things. But, like, once the fame really started to hit, that was also probably not surprisingly when he started doing heavier drugs.
Heroin is expensive, dude.
Exactly. And so he's doing more and more drugs. And as has been relayed by, like, some of the people closer to him, is, like, when you get to that certain level of fame, you, one, have a right to be paranoid because people are trying to exploit you.
Yes.
But at the same time, the drugs don't help that
exactly.
at all.
Exactly.
So he's doing more drugs. And he's also worried he's being exploited for good reason, because he was being exploited by
yeah.
people. And he just kind of starts to spiral really fast.
Yep.
I also think his age had something to do with that. I think, like, that level of fame at, like, 25.
I can't even fathom
right?
that.
Like, it's just, I can barely handle just regular life, like, in
yeah.
my 20s, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, we've been out recently where people were like, oh my god, are you guys the art history babes? And I'm like, ah!
That happened once.
No, there was that chick at the bar, remember?
Oh, yeah, it happened twice.
It happened twice.
The chick at the bar? Oh, the chick from Lithuania?
You weren't there.
No,
oh. I don't think she was from Lithuania.
Okay, no. So it happened to us twice, and it was very cool, and, like,
it was so cool.
But in those two very kind of laid-back situations, we were like, ah!
Yeah, we were both like, whoa!
And we're not making millions of dollars off
we're
this.
We're making
any
no dollars.
We made some
okay,
dollars.
Okay, we made approximately $300.
Heyo!
300 is better than no 100.
It is, and we're very appreciative.
The Spartans took down the Persians, according to Frank Miller.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Anyone who has contributed to those $300, we're very grateful.
We love you.
We love you very much. So having that insane level of fame and just obviously, like, everyone wanted to sleep with him. Everyone wanted a piece of him. Everyone wanted to talk to him. He was, like, a big fucking deal.
The women wanted to be with him. The men wanted to be him.
For real, though. Everyone wanted a piece of him. And I can't...
And for someone who's also, like, he strikes me as... As having been, like, a very introverted person.
Yeah.
And being an introverted person and having that level of exposure and people just around you all the time, it just...
He's one of those fascinating people. Like, I get it. He's very, like, he's definitely introverted, but, like, likes to party all the time, which...
Right?
I feel like... I'm very introverted, but like to party all the time.
Me too.
I think it's all of us.
We want to be alone for the most part, but then when we are being social, we want to burn a building down.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it.
Yeah. Leave me alone for the most part, unless you want to commit arson in a very public way, in which case, I'm down.
No, I feel like that's kind of an artist mentality. I think people are attracted to art. Like, we tend to be very introverted in the sense that I like to spend a lot of time alone. I can spend all weekend by myself just, like, reading and, like, on the internet. And I'm very happy.
Watching some crazy documentaries.
Watching documentaries, and I'm like, I need that. But then, like, after, like, 3 or 4 days, I need to burn some shit down.
Sure.
Like, I need to get hella social. I need to dance it out in a club. Like, so
I want to know about your problems.
Yeah. So it's that interesting space between introversion and extroversion that I think he definitely experienced because he was like he partied all the time.
Yeah.
But he was clearly in his own head constantly.
Yes. Yes.
Like, it's very obvious in any interview you watch with him, he lived in his own head, which is what made his art so compelling, is because it was this expression of literally what was going on in his head at any given moment, which is so fucking cool.
Yes.
And
again, CNBC, you don't fucking get it.
Yeah, get out.
We don't like you.
Get out, CNBC. But also, from an art historical perspective, this is also for you, CNBC. If you don't just, like, appreciate his work aesthetically or take the time to understand it, his work had mad art historical references.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
All over the fucking place. He would reference Da Vinci.
He knew what he was.
He would reference Van Gogh, Picasso, de Kooning, Pollock, like everybody.
And movements.
Everything. He knew his shit.
And like
dude.
Mocked movements.
Yeah.
I think that he was an ultimate, like, well, okay, so he's been described as a neo-expressionist, which I think is a good description. I also think that if we're getting on that label hype, we need to add to that as a postmodern neo-expressionist.
Oh, definitely. Yes. He's postmodern all day. Like, so much of postmodernism.
Yeah, and if we want
to it had the irony, it had the cynicism.
Yeah, and if we want to get, like, really, like, deep into his shit, the fact that race really influences his work, and I would like to look at Basquiat's work through a post-colonial lens.
Hell yeah.
And I think that is why I am equally as upset as all the rest of us at CNNBC, because how fucking dare you compare a black man's work to a child's work? You know what you did. You know it's heinous. I'm not going to hear any excuses. That shit was nasty.
Yeah.
And really upsetting.
And there's an interview on that documentary, The Radiant Child. There's an interview with Basquiat, and it's so great because he just keeps his cool so well. Someone, like, I don't even know who it was, some white dude, was, like, talking to him about his work, and I don't think he meant to be as horrible as what he said was, but, like, he was just, like, he brought up the term, like, there's something, like, primitive or something about your work, and Basquiat just stops, he's like a primate, and, like, the white dude, like, stops in his track, and Basquiat just kind of giggles, and I'm like, seriously, like, fuck off, like, I know we talked about this in the Cubism episode, but fuck the term primitivism.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I know.
Fuck it.
I talk about primitivism a lot in my thesis. It's
so messed up.
It's like, okay, it's so the whole sort of mentality behind primitivism is that an industrialist Europe is constructing European utopias. And so this idea of utopia is huge in, like, early, yes. I'm talking like 19th, 20th century.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Utopia and like people all over writing the place. About utopia, yes. Has become like just huge. Everyone is interested in going back to a utopia. And the utopia is always a pre-colonized world with a right. natural man. And so famously, these modernist artists cite African masks, mm-hmm. and Mesoamerican forms, yep. and even like Japanese calligraphy and Japanese hand scrolls, yep. Japanese woodblock prints. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These things become hailed among the like modernists of the early 20th century as being something that's coming from that place of a natural man,
yeah.
that mm-hmm. is untouched by the trappings,
yeah.
of European civilization. Oh, civilization.
Yeah.
No. I want to be nude on a sand beach and drink water out of a coconut.
And if you're Gauguin, take advantage of young girls. Like,
yeah.
Fuck Gauguin.
That episode's coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We gotta get there.
We've been yeah, talking about it for so long. It's coming. Okay.
But anyways.
Anyways, I really hate any time that anyone calls anything primitive.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, it's
get
fucked
the fuck
up.
Out my face. You're
it's
close.
Just, it, yeah, it's just a fucked up term, and like, we can describe these artworks so much better. Like, I really, so I love the name of the documentary, The Radiant yeah. Child. And I, there are points where his work is discussed as him expressing his inner child, mm-hmm. which is very real because, so he, at the age of 7, he was hit by a car. I mean, how many amazing artists were fucking in car accidents? Like,
what?
Well, Frida was hit by a bus
yeah.
in a trolley. Or wait, was she in a...
She was in
she
a
bus. Trolley and hit by a bus?
Yeah.
She was in a trolley and she got hit by a bus.
But anyways, he was hit by a car at the age of 7, and it was a very, like, traumatic experience for him, but it also, like, is really important in his artwork because he was in the hospital for a while. He had his spleen removed, I believe. It was, you know, it was a big deal. It wasn't just, like, he got tapped by yeah. a car. Like, it was, you know, pretty fatal. And while he was in the hospital, his mom gave him a copy of the book Grey's Anatomy, you know, which is, like, full of anatomy, like, illustrations oh, yeah. and shit. Mm-hmm. And it is so clear, like, his work is so clearly influenced by this book, like, the work with anatomy and things yeah. like that.
That's interesting, dude, because yeah. I'm just still thinking about Frida. When Frida was confined to her bed for, like, a year and a half, these medical mm-hmm. books yeah. with medical illustrations were hugely influencing to, like, her aesthetic.
Definitely.
At the time, yeah.
And that's very much what happened with Basquiat. And if you go back and look at a lot of his work, like, you're going to find... One, you're going to find illustrations of things that clearly, you know, look influenced by an anatomy text. You're also going to find images of cars mm-hmm. and transportation.
Yes.
And, like, so there is, as his work, as we said, it's definitely neo-expressionism. It's super expressive. There's definitely expression of important things that happened in his childhood. Also, it's been described as his way of creating art is him kind of channeling his inner child.
Yeah.
And that is beautiful. Like, I
and
think
it's
that...
it's not primitive.
It's not primitive. It's him
yeah.
expressing some very real emotion of being a child. It's
dude,
not,
yeah.
like...
why is the child primitive? I don't
exactly.
understand that. It's like, oh, are you just, like, the child is trapped in some sort of innocent, like, framework that, like, is untouched. Children are super fucking observant and observe
dude,
and
yes.
absorb
yes.
everything around them.
Children so, are the best. Like,
referring to children as somehow untouched or pure or innocent is so, like,
and yeah, or primitive. Like, and, like, so there's this cross, yeah, this cross area of being like, oh, so some of his work is childlike, therefore it's primitive, and it's like, no, bitch,
no.
like, that's not what's going on here. Like, first off, like, I have been working with children for, like, over 10 years. I love children.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. They're, like, their eyes are so open in ways you, ours just aren't anymore, you know? Like, they're just, like, the creativity that flows out of them is crazy.
They're not hella jaded.
Exactly, and it's beautiful, and the fact that Basquiat could, like, channel that, but still represent it in a mature way is genius. And it is in no way primitive, you know? It's
don't
like,
ever call it primitive. primitive. Like, if you ever call it primitive in my fucking face, I'm gonna be mad and we're gonna fight because that shit's super lame. I'm so sick of people saying that things made by people of color are somehow primitive.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a racial angle. It's primitive. What does that mean? Like, who makes these distinctions? Oh, it's white Europeans.
For real. Basquiat's work is in no way primitive. It's actually, like, a genius expression of the entire human experience, so fuck off. I mean, I think we're definitely in a place where at least people who appreciate art understand that more now. If you're ever about to talk about any art as primitive, just don't. Just, like, don't do
it. Yeah, like, check yourself before you wreck yourself, for real, because you're going to look like a dumb idiot, and no one wants to be that person to be like, well, actually, you're a dumb piece of shit. Like, just don't refer to things as primitive.
But while we're kind of discussing some of these harder, more problematic aspects.
Problematic.
Okay, so first off, Jean-Michel Basquiat, man of color, making art. Doesn't mean every one of his works is about being a man of color, because, like, that's also a problem, is being like, hey, this person of a certain cultural background is
only
just,
makes that.
Yeah, that's not okay. But he did make art that did reference specific things about being a black man.
There was a racial angle.
There was a racial angle
for sure
to a lot of his work. So he used the crown emblem a lot. Like, he would, a lot of his works involve a crown, and it had to do with
black kings.
Yes, black kings. Basically trying to represent powerful black men as kings, because they have at that point so rarely had been represented that way. So there was obviously a powerful, like, racial undertone there. He did work that very much resonated with his experience as a black man. Like, he referenced famous jazz artists. He referenced famous black athletes. Like, so race was a part of his work, and he was trying to bring that to the forefront. And then especially, you know, 1980s, police brutality as an issue was a big thing in the 80s into the early 90s.
Totally, dude, because the 80s was, like, the whole crack epidemic and the whole, like, AIDS epidemic. And, like, these things wouldn't be epidemics if legislators were even, like, remotely concerned for issues affecting, like, black inner-city communities.
Exactly, exactly. So there's a graffiti artist by the name of Michael Stewart that was arrested for graffiti art, because for some reason that was a travesty, like, to paint shit on walls.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Spray paint on this abandoned building.
Yeah. Anyway, so he was arrested, and then he was beaten to death by five white police officers. And as you can imagine, this affected Jean-Michel Basquiat in a very, like, real way, because that easily could have been him.
Yes.
Like, he was out there doing the exact same
thing.
Holy
shit.
I know, super fucked up. Like, it's so fucked up. That was a time period where I think a lot of his work was a lot more focused on issues of race. And definitely a intensely social political aspect of his work too, but at the same time, that wasn't all his work.
Right.
And I think that's really important to recognize too, is, like, because people are so quick to put, you know, artists of color into this box of, like, they can only make art that's about their experience as like a black man, or, like,
I think that black artists have a really difficult time navigating their identities as a black artist.
For real.
When you become a black artist, so I'm, like, you know, there are theoretical air quotes around black artists.
So many air quotes.
I know, I'm just, like, expecting you guys to, like, figure it out. But, you know, this idea of the black artist, it's like you are given a responsibility to represent problems and issues within the black community when you become a black artist. It's the same as being a Chicano artist.
Or a female artist.
Or a female artist, or a, like, gay artist, or a trans artist. All of these things, it's like,
if you're not a white male artist, your art is suddenly about the group that is
you represent.
You know, whatever your prefix is, you better make sure that you're representing that. And I think that's fucked. And that's, like, the world that, like, Basquiat was, like, put into. And I think that that's unfair, you know, because thinking of this issue as, like, someone who is, like, a person of color, even though my skin is so much lighter than Ginny and Corey's, I don't get out into the sun because I'm afraid of melanoma. So I don't really get in the sun very much. I'm the whitest Mexican you've ever seen. So like white skin, but my hair is black. Anyway, basically the point what I'm trying to say is that when you have some sort of affiliation with being a person of color, it's like you suddenly take on this whole responsibility to represent the community that other people have, like, said that you're a part of.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know? Mm-hmm.
So even if I've never come out, like, formally and been like, I am a representative of the Chicana community, someone else is going to make that judgment.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with artists like Basquiat and, like, why I feel his work has either been, like, pigeonholed or it's been, like, just credited.
Definitely.
I feel like he's been pigeonholed as an artist of color, or he has been somehow discredited as being a, as being someone who, like, leached off of Andy Warhol.
Yeah, or, like, Madonna's
Which
boyfriend.
Is, right. Right? Which is such bullshit, because, first off, Andy Warhol leached off Basquiat. Like, let's be real. Like,
parasitic.
Parasitic shit.
Warhol knew he was going down. He was like, I'm old. My
I've been
shit.
Shot.
I've been doing this. Yeah, he got shot. Oh! Yes! He got shot by this lady who was, like, a, you know, a lady with some problems, all right? He knew a lady with some problems. She met him, Miss Valerie Solanas, a radical feminist. She wrote the Scum Manifesto.
Oh, yeah.
The Society for Cutting Up Men.
That's intense.
Damn.
She had a degree in psychology. Her tagline for the Scum Manifesto was, overthrow the government, eliminate the money system, institute complete automation, and eliminate the male sex. Okay.
I mean, like, I'm with her on some of it, but,
a
like,
little bit.
Like, some of it.
So she accused...
I mean, right now I want to overthrow the government. Fuck the government.
I don't want to eliminate the male sex.
No, none of us here want that.
I really like you guys.
It reminds me of the episode of Rick and Morty where they go to that universe where they just use men for breeding. Do you remember that episode?
Yeah.
But they're all doing, like, really stereotypical feminine things. Like the way they talk to each other is like, I'm here if you need to talk. That's good.
Oh, my God.
What was that article, though, about that I told you to screenshot? The...
Oh,
you guys gotta hear.
Wait, I didn't finish what I was about to say.
Finish.
All I really had to say was that she had a play that she wanted Andy Warhol to produce. It was called Up Your Ass. And she accused him of stealing her script. And she was very disgruntled over what she believed to be an injustice. And she went to the factory on June 3rd, 1968 and shot Warhol 3 times. And he
almost died.
He almost died. Yeah. He suffered from complications from his gunshot wounds for the rest of his life until he died in, I believe he passed away in 1988 of complications from
he died in 1988 too?
Yeah.
Cause so Basquiat died August 12th, 1988. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have 1987, but I think it was, like, closely thereafter. At the age of 58, he had complications from gallbladder surgery that were further complicated by his gunshot wounds. And after Andy Warhol passed away, Basquiat, who actually really loved Andy.
They were tight.
Got super depressed and just started doing, like, mad heroin. And he passed away on August 12th, 1988, of a heroin overdose at age 27.
Yeah, 27 Club, along with
Dang.
Jim Morrison, Amy Winehouse,
Janis Joplin,
Heath Ledger,
Jimi Hendrix,
Kurt Cobain. 27 Club, man.
Yeah.
I made it through. I'm at 28.
I'm not 28 yet. I need to, like, tread carefully.
If you're younger than 27, watch yourself.
Watch don't yourself. Die.
I'm trying to watch myself.
Don't join.
Just
that
don't.
Club.
Okay, but like, let's be real.
Just don't do heroin.
Yeah, everyone in the 27 Club also did heroin, so don't do heroin. You're gonna be fine.
Just don't ever put a needle in
don't,
your arm,
man. Like I'm like seriously.
Unless you're giving blood and it's done by a professional.
Yeah, like I'm like do your thing. Like you want to explore stuff, fine. Just don't do heroin. Just don't do heroin.
It'll literally
like,
kill you.
Seriously, there are other drugs you can try that
it's
won't
not
kill
that
you.
Cool.
Like
it's,
don't do heroin.
Do ayahuasca. Not that cool.
Do shrooms, do LSD, don't do heroin.
Do ayahuasca and be like the guy from Altered States. He turned into a monkey.
Yeah.
That's badass.
There's so many
it's
other...
better than dying.
There's so many other drugs. Don't do heroin.
PSA.
Don't do heroin. We are against heroin.
We are. We're not about heroin. But, so we got this great, this beautiful headline from
the fucking Sun.
From the Sun that Ginny's gonna read for you.
So this was just published last month.
Switch wine?
We did.
A while ago. Oh, yeah.
Do you want to switch back?
No,
I'm sorry.
It's
okay.
Fine.
So the headline for this is Who's That Guy? How Madonna's Junkie X became an art hero with piece fetching 85.4 million pounds 29 years after he died of a heroin overdose.
Oh, he fetched it. He just fetched it.
Which
like
I
a
just
dog.
Thought was like crazy.
Like, honestly, okay, so.
Madonna's washed up, and I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
She's
I don't
done.
Even, I don't like her also, and I. Okay.
Okay, before we get into the Madonna hate. I do have a really good quote from Madonna about Basquiat that I want to read because it's a good quote, and I think it captures what Basquiat was about in a very real way. He loathed the idea that art was appreciated by an elite group. He used to say he was jealous of me because music is more accessible and it reached more people.
Whoa.
Which is beautiful.
That's a good quote.
I know, because once again, going back to our earlier conversation, while Basquiat wanted to be successful, he was hella competitive. It's really interesting because he lived this, like, bohemian lifestyle, but I feel like he was such a perfect balance of, like, he was bohemian, I'm just, like, living my life, but he was competitive. He wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
And he wanted to do good work. And so it's this crazy balance. But at the end of the day, like, he didn't want his art to just be for the elite. Like, he wanted it to be for people.
Right.
And I think that's, like, the most important thing about his shit.
That's why I wish that more of his street art existed, you know?
Yeah.
That shit's been painted over a million times over, but I don't know. I just think that, he may have been stoked that his work went for so much, but he might have also felt, like, perverse.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that he wasn't in some way, like, your tragic kind of tortured artist to an extent. I think he struggled with fame in a very real way. Which, you know, compounded with Andy Warhol and the heroin and shit got out of hand and Madonna. I don't know. Like, I guess Madonna was pretty cool at that time.
She was fine.
You know, like,
whatever.
Like a Virgin was kind of a jam. But
she had some really cool nudes that came around.
What was that book? That book.
What the fuck was that book called?
I don't remember.
It was super erotic. I can't remember.
She had like the biggest.
I remember finding that in Barnes & Noble as a child.
Yeah.
And like the pages were so bent from like so many people flipping through it. Probably a lot of like, you know, 14-year-olds.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had like a working woman's bush.
Well, that was like the Steves in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Let's bring that shit back.
Oh, I thought we were about to flip to, like, a page of her book.
No, I just...
Corey's flipping through a book right now, and I was like, oh, are we about to see Madonna's bush? I can't
I just wanted, because obviously we're, like, wrapping up. I kind of just wanted to look at some of his paintings and talk about them a little bit, because his shit's so cool. I've got a couple of books. I went to the library today. And picked
up... I
want
to hang out with him, dude.
A couple... Dude, I was at the library today, and it was just... It was just infested with undergrad studying for finals.
And get out.
And I was like, you guys are such sucker chumps.
Nobody likes you. Just kidding. We like
you. Yeah, we like you.
We're
but
just
I'm
being shit talkers.
Oh, beautiful.
We like some
Philistines from 1982.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, this is very nice. I enjoy it very much. Acrylic
the colors
and oil.
Are beautiful.
Paint stick on canvas. 72 by 123 inches. That's a good size.
He did a lot of large scale paintings. This is really cool though. He's got those faces. So like the painting that he sold for the $110 million, it's an untitled work. We'll post it on our images, but it's one of his faces.
Would you call it primitive?
No, fuck no. I will never call any work primitive. Like,
if the words primitive come out of my mouth, it's because I am judging you for forgetting how to use basic amenities as an adult.
This is also a cool thing he would do. So his work incorporated, like, words a lot. He was very poetic. And he would do this thing where he would, like, write words and then he'd cross them out. And the reason he said he would do that is because if you cross out a word, it makes people want to read it more.
True.
That's true.
Isn't that dope?
If I see something crossed out, I'm like, what did you say?
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, head.
That's beautiful.
1981. Yeah. Head.
Head. His heads are legit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
I just dig this. So much. There's math. That's math on the
page. Yeah. Yes.
His work is seriously so formula. Cool. Like I said, I was talking about this earlier. I haven't seen very much Basquiat in person.
Yes, dude. I knew he was influenced by this motherfucker.
Kirshner?
Yeah, Kirshner is
I have
a dark
his naked lady in my bathroom.
Kirshner's.
I know.
Cy Twombly, too. He was.
Cy Twombly.
He was really into Da Vinci. He would, like, do a lot of shit with
him. Whose man's is this?
Da Vinci's man.
Oh!
I mean, yeah, Da Vinci's man. Sure.
Da Vinci knew what he was talking about. Yeah,
Gauguin.
Ew, just Yellow gonna... Christ. Get him out of here.
Anyway.
There he is with Andy. Oh, what's the work? Is it Dos Cabezas, the work with him and Andy? He did. It's a really great painting, and it's, like, it's his signature, like, heads, but it's
actually,
him and Andy.
It's really sweet. It's, like, a very well-made representation of Basquiat and Andy in Basquiat's style, and I think it's really cute. I think it just kind of encapsulates their friendship.
This is an important one.
Sugar Ray Robinson,
yes. So it's untitled, parentheses, Sugar Ray Robinson, 1982. This work was very much in that, like, what we were talking about when he got representative of his experience as a black male and was very, there it is, it was very into just representing important, you know, black male athletes and important people in history. And it's just, like, it's almost kind of minimalist. It's just black.
Yes.
And there's this face and the crown and there's the Sugar Ray Robinson, but it's just so cool.
Yeah.
I wonder how much this went for. I wonder how, like, who owns this.
I hope Sugar Ray Robinson owns it.
It'd be so dope. Yeah, a lot. He had paintings of, like, boxers and baseball players. What else do we have in here? Yeah, so we've got the Dos Cabezas, 1982. It's...
I love it.
I love it, too.
I love it so much, dude. Look at his, like, happy face.
I know. They just look like...
Happy man.
They just look like friends. They're just like, hey, we're friends.
I'm going to paint you guys in this style. I'm like, my friends.
Cool.
My friends.
I'm down.
He had an insane amount of work. Like, I swear this man never slept in his 27 years.
He probably didn't.
Like...
That's why he probably only lived to be 27.
I know. He made so much work.
Incredibly prolific.
Yeah.
Like, it is really, really astounding.
And there's just so much of it.
Just between 1983 and 1985, with Warhol, he created over 200 collaborative works.
Oh, look at him.
I know.
Keith.
Also, he
Keith
was...
Harry.
He was...
Spoiled boys.
He was super tight with Keith Haring, who we'll also do an episode about because I'm a little obsessed with Keith.
I love Keith Haring. He's a guy.
He is. He's such a guy. But we're looking at a super cute picture of Basquiat just giving him a little kiss on
the
forehead.
They're just, like, so cute.
They are super cute.
Oh, I just wish that I was best friends with someone like that.
I know, right?
I am, actually.
Yeah, there's just, God, there's so much work. We'll do our best to put some of it up, but, like,
we'll do our best.
You guys gotta watch. You have to watch Basquiat, which is the fictionalized.
It's very good.
It's very good, and that's
Basquiat,
the one.
Basquiat, Radiant Child.
And then you have to watch the documentary, which is on YouTube for free, called The Radiant Child.
So good.
It's very good, and just, like, captures him, and you'll get to experience him in all of his enigmatic, mysterious beauty. He was so cool. I want to be, like, 1/10 as cool as he is.
I think that you are. sure.
Oh, thanks. Oh, he loves Mark Twain, too. Mark Twain was his favorite author, which I think is super cute. Like, he really liked Mark Twain. And, like, Mark Twain is...
Me too.
Such the American author. Like, I love it. I mean, we could talk about Basquiat, I feel like, for, like, a really long time.
Nah, we're cool right now.
but we have so much listener mail.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry we've fallen behind, everyone.
But there's so much. There's no way we can
I'm literally just picking a few out of the hat, and we're going to just... talk about them, because we have so much, and you guys are so great. Like, seriously, you're amazing.
Okay, we love it.
Here's a good one. This one's coming from Shannon. Hey, Art History Babes. I just listened to your podcast on Salvador Dali and was so excited to see the episode because I'm currently reading this autobiography, The Secret Life of Salvador Dali.
Ooh.
In your episode, you were talking about his king's costume. And questioning how and why he got it. He actually addresses this in his prologue and says that he admired and actually wanted to be Napoleon.
Oh, we said that. We said that.
And that on the day of the Feast of Kings, his parents actually bought him a crown and cape. I guess his parents didn't know all of the details of what he'd be doing in his costume.
Yeah.
LOL.
Was so probably like Napoleon and fucking Hitler.
He had a literal Napoleon complex.
For real. Anyways, hope this helps a little. Love your podcast, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon.
That is great. As a great little factual tidbit.
We enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That's
good. And we'll do one other one. We got a witness. We'll stay on the subject of Dali.
Oh.
Okay, so we've got a witness to Dali fraud here. Here's some Salvador Dali feedback. There's a journalist who witnessed Dali signing blank lithographs.
Yeah.
Dali and his manager did this right in front of him, apparently with no problem.
Don't doubt it.
And Dali's late life muse, Amanda Lear, also joked about it to the journalist whom she was acquainted and or friends with. See article linked below. So it didn't seem to be such a huge secret. That does raise the question whether the art world just didn't want to actually reveal the facts. If Dali and his manager were not actually being very secretive about it, maybe they knew how the art world works.
I believe it.
Yeah. By art world, I mean the art, quote, establishment and commercial side. We feel you, bro. Of course, it's fraudulent on Dali's side, but it does expose many flaws in the art market.
Word.
Anyway, a guy called Mick Brown went to interview Dali and spent a day with him and his entourage in 1973. Here's a link to an article with the journalist retelling what happened. We'll put this on our links.
It's gonna be good.
My weekend with Salvador Dali.
That must have been a weird time.
I know, right? But anyways, yeah, so the whole Dali fraud thing... I think that's a really fair point to bring up, and we kind of addressed it a little bit, is like, how much of it was fraud and how much of it was the art world just being like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know? Dude, I think it was
We've already said art, the art market is really problematic.
It's so problematic. And we'll do
very complex.
It makes no sense. Like, it could be anything.
It could.
I could be like, wow, my toenail's gonna go for 200K, ladies and gentlemen. The toenail from Jennifer's right foot. On sale now on Sotheby's.
Sotheby's?
Okay, did I say it wrong? Did I say it wrong? How do you say it?
Sotheby's.
Ooh! Okay, my bad. Whatever, dude. Spanish was my first language. Get out of my face.
Yeah, we'll definitely at some point do just an episode on us bitching about the art market, because I think we have lots of feelings about it.
But this was a good, like, intro.
Yeah, it was. Also, just to be fair, like I said, we were celebrating the Dubs winning the finals. So if
my babe is the one, guys. Klay Thompson, I love you. Please marry me.
He's married, bro.
No.
Yeah.
Divorce her.
He's married.
Whatever.
But I'd literally marry any of them. Iggy. Oh, man. Iggy's my boy.
I don't even know who that is.
Andre Iguodala? Ooh, oh, fuck.
Sorry.
KD. Curry. Curry is the...
I'm not attracted to him.
Oh, I'm...
He's like a little boy.
No, he's hot.
I know. No, Corey and I argue about this all the
time. She's a Klay Thompson girl. I'm a Steph Curry girl.
Klay Thompson is so much hotter. just FYI.
Yeah. But, man, they killed it tonight. So, yeah, we were already in a celebratory mood when we started this episode. So, hopefully, you could follow what we were saying. But, you know.
I think that we were very eloquent. And congratulations for listening to this badass episode.
Congratulations.
Okay, congratulations. We've done it. This is the first episode we've recorded since we've submitted our thesis.
In a long time.
Woo! So, even if it's, like, kind of rusty, I literally don't care. Because this is the best you could expect from us.
Anyways, we would really like to hear your feedback on Basquiat because there's, like, so much to talk about.
Give it to me, babe.
Yeah, and we would just like to hear all of your thoughts, really, on the Basquiat selling for 110 mil, on his work, on whatever we
just
talked about.
Anything. Anything. Send us your thoughts.
Did you think Andy Warhol was a parasite? We want to know.
I want to know.
So email us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, at Art History Babes Podcast.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter, y'all, because, like, our Twitter game isn't the greatest, so, like...
We're working on it.
We're working on it, though, so follow us on Twitter. We can, like, help amp that up, at Art History Babes. Like us on Facebook, Art History Babes. What else am I... Tumblr, arthistorybabes.tumblr.com. Patreon! Patreon.com/ArtHistoryBabes.
Oh, shit!
Also, we're going to get on that YouTube vibe. We have a YouTube channel, so follow it, because, like, we're going to start recording
videos.
We're going
to do more over the summer. We're going to just
be, like, video
Oh,
yeah, we have
like
a couple videos sitting on the dog.
Yeah.
The Bob Ross drinking game.
Oh, shit. Forgot about that.
Yeah, so we're going to start getting videos out there, and we're also going to be doing some blogging, like, hardcore. Look out for our travel blog.
It's going to be so good.
We are going to be throwing so much content
your
way.
We're going to be in Berlin, like, your love, it takes me high. Haven't I been before?
Exactly. This summer, just be expecting mad content from
Eric
and Babe.
So much content.
Content. We're doing it. We're making it happen.
Content.
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 Content. Thank you so much for listening. You all are great.
We love you.
We love you so much.
I love you.
Go Dubs. 2017.
Woo!
NBA champions.
That's the one.
We are history, babe.
It would happen. I'd just be like, oh, I'm gonna go pee, guys. See you in a bit. Like, go down some, like, dark stone stairwell and just, like, emerge into some shit that I...
In, like, a vampire's den?
Yeah. And just be like, no. 999.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.